Well, good morning. Could you dim the lights, please? Thank you. Well, first of all, I'd like to thank the organizers for inviting me. It's always fun to be in Santa Barbara, and this looks like a really great program to be part of. So I'm going to tell you about how we've been trying to basically design a topological superconductor in the lab, which hosts Majorana fermions, and show you the experiments I've been doing for the last couple of years, and also some new updates from the latest results. So before I get started, let me tell you who's done all the work. The experiments in the lab have been done by Ilya and Stefan over the last few years. And recently, Ben, Malika, Sung Jun, and Yong Long are the new members of the team who are jumping in and obtaining new experimental results. And this project has been a sort of a very close collaboration with the group of Andre Brnovic, and his postdoc, Jian Li, has really contributed tremendously to our understanding of this platform. And in addition, we've been working very closely with Alan MacDonald and his group doing DFT calculation to try and understand the system we're building in the lab. So let me just start this by just reminding you what we are trying to do. We're trying to basically create sort of the simplest possible topological superconductor you can have, in this case, to try to actually build a cation chain. So let me just remind you that this is just a chain of atoms, which you have hopping of electrons between them. And these electrons are spinless. And we introduce pairing on this lattice of the type where the electrons are paired between nearest neighbor sites. And the reason we should do that is because we have spinless electrons. And these spinless electrons, of course, have to obey the fact that they are fermions. And for that reason, you have to have a p-wave orbital wave function. So this model has basically two phases, as you know. And in one of those phases, you are in a topological superconducting phase in which you can rewrite this whole Hamiltonian in terms of Majorana fermions and realize that the end of this chain hosts basically the zero modes, which are the signature of being in the topological phase. Now, these Majoranas are actually much more exciting than things that you could possibly have in high-energy physics because they're just really non-local objects. And they come in pairs that are at the edge of the system that can be very long. And therefore, having non-abelian statistics is one of the holy grails of things we would like to show if you could create the system in the lab. Now, I'll show this slide so I can get more time in this talk. This is work of Leon, which basically paved the way for us to try to think about how we would engineer such a thing in the laboratory, basically using the surface state of topological insulators. The fact that the momentum and spin are locked together basically gives you the way to make a p-wave superconductor. And so spin is taken out of the electrons, and in this way we are making a spinless superconductor. And of course, this idea was basically realized in a much simpler setting using basically nanowires, which are strong spin orbit coupled, which gives you this band structure, which with the application of the magnetic field, you can create essentially the same situation where the forward-moving electron have one spin and the backward-moving electron have the opposite spin. And this spin momentum locking, again, can give you this topological condition. Now, this system has been realized experimentally, and this is a famous experiment by Leo Coenhoven, and it's been reproduced by many people, which doing tunneling spectroscopy with a fixed electrode, you see a zero bias peak, which is indicative of having a zero mode, which is presumably localized to the edge of this superconducting wire. So this is the point we got into this business, which is this really a zero mode living at the edge of a 1D system? Is this due to the Condor effect? It's some of the questions that have been raised in the field. But also, one of the issues here, of course, from the perspective of building a quantum computer may be advantageous in the fact that you can turn on and off this topological condition in the lab using gates to tune yourself to this part of the band structure. But at the same time, this requires fine-tuning to be in the right place in the band structure to get a topological phase. So I'm going to show you a completely different platform which we are using. And Our motivation to develop this platform were basically to use the scanning tunneling microscope and the imaging tools that we have available to us to not only do spectroscopy of the energy state of the system to see zero modes, but also characterize where in the system is it coming from. And we have done this sort of thing on 2D or 3D topological systems in the past. And this, basically, the ability of the STM to image things in real space is very, very useful in this topological game, because everything happens at the edge of the system. And we can actually get access to it. All right. So the idea that we came upon was to basically use magnetism. And we built on work of many people, Carlo Binaker and others in particular, trying to basically think about what would happen if you have a chain of magnetic atom on a superconductor surface. So what's the connection between this and the Kataev model? It's actually quite simple. If you have a situation in which you have a spin on a superconductor, of course you cannot put pairs of electrons on this site. The spin degeneracy is lifted. You're not going to have on-site pairing. But now imagine the situation where I have an angle between spins on nearest neighbor site, okay? And this angle basically allows me to take a pair from the underlying superconductor and put it on top of this chain. And by virtue of the fact that you have this angle between these sites, essentially you have P-wave pairing, okay? Spin is taken out of the problem because magnetism has dictated for us to at every site the spin is well defined. So this is the simplest idea here. And this is what we're trying to build. And initially, we started doing calculations, thinking about, OK, what do individual magnetic impurities do to the superconductor? And we built them into a chain. So let me just remind you that if you take a superconductor and put a magnetic impurity on its surface, you basically get these in-gap states. These are called Sheba states. They are basically neutral excitation of a superconductor, a mixture of electrons and holes, which live at low energy inside the superconducting gap. And you can tune them at different energies depending on the exchange interaction between the spin impurity and the superconductor host. Now, these are basically localized neutral modes that are living around individual magnetic impurity in a superconductor. Now, if you put this in a chain, as we did in a model calculation with Andre, is that we basically consider a situation where you have a chain and you have a helical kind of texture of these magnetic impurities. And now you can ask what the spectrum of the excitation of the system is doing as you crank up the value of the local exchange interaction. And you find that at a critical value of exchange interaction, essentially the system undergoes a transition where basically the gap closes, a new gap opens up, and this new gap has inside of it a zero mode, which is indicative of our Majorana edge mode. So you can look at the local density of state. Inside the system, you will have a gap. At the edge, you will have this zero mode. And spatially, if you look at the wave function of the zero mode, it will be living at the very edge of the system. Now, experimentally, there has been situations in which such helical spin chains have actually been realized in the laboratory. But of course, this is hard. Okay? So you wonder, what will happen if you have just a ferromagnet? Okay, now a ferromagnet, let's just take a linear chain with just a single band that is spin exchange. Might be kind of crazy to think that you would have superconductivity induced on such a system. But now, if you additionally add the situation where the underlying superconductor can have spin orbit interaction, then you can have a situation where actually the spin on this band is actually not quite always up as you move along the momentum. It actually sort of tilts a little bit because of a spin orbit interaction in the host. And under that situation, you can actually gap this superconductor. So now you don't have the spin texture in the magnetic moments, if you like, of this system, but you've put the spin texture inside the superconductor through the spin orbit interaction. And if you compute the size of the P-wave gap, basically it goes like the size of the spin orbit interaction, but of course it's scaled by the size of the exchange interaction J, which tells you that if you make magnetism very, very strong, the size of this P-wave gap and P-wave pairing would be very, very weak. Now, this actually has a key advantage. And the key advantage can be illustrated if you just take a sort of a simple situation where you have, say, just d orbitals and you put these d orbitals and put in some exchange interaction, which is typical, let's say, for a chain of iron atoms, as I will show you, which is about 2 electron volts. The key advantage here is that the minority band is the only thing that's near the chemical potential. The majority band is completely filled. Okay? And in this situation, when you have such a large exchange interaction, you're almost always guaranteed to be topological, because you have a situation where you have taken the other spin out of the system, it's underneath the Fermi level, it's far away, and all you need is some exchange interaction, some spin-orbit coupling, which is strong enough to pair your electrons on this Fermi surface. If you do that, then the system is going to be topological. So this is both an advantage and a disadvantage. The advantage is that you're almost guaranteed to be topological if you built the system. But of course, you cannot turn it off very easily because of the fact that you cannot fine-tune in and out of the topological phase. All right, so that's the idea. So let's look at the experiment. Can we build it? So we start with lead. Lead is a sort of honest-to-God S-wave superconductor, which is very well understood. We take the lead 110 surface, which is has a structure which is basically anisotropic because of the way we cut the crystal. And this lends us a platform, basically, to build upon it our one-dimensional system. We take this crystal, which is a very good superconductor. We can just look at the superconducting properties. It has a hard gap at about 1.4 Kelvin. And essentially, this is like a classic textbook BCS superconductor, but it has strong spin-orbit coupling. Now, what we did was we basically evaporated iron on top of the surface. And iron basically first goes down as these blobs. Okay? Now, if you heat up this system after you've deposited iron on the surface, you discover that the iron diffuses along the chain, along the rows of the atomic crystal, basically making for you one-dimensional chain along the crystal. So let's take a look at that more carefully. These are blobs from which our magnetic chain is growing out of. Okay? And you can sort of see that it can have lengths that are very long, a few hundred angstroms. We have some situations where we can get rid of the blobs, but it's hard because they provide the atoms for us to grow the one-dimensional chain out of. And we know, basically, this is one atom wide. Because if you look at it with the STM image, this is a topograph, you can sort of see that the structure sits with the center in between the two rows of lead. And essentially what you're doing here is you're imaging the shape of your tip. Which here is a single atom, which tells you what you have here is a single wide atomic chain. I'm going to tell you more details of the structure of this chain a little later, but first let's talk about its magnetism. So to measure its magnetism in situ, you have to use a tool called the spin polarized STM, which is a tip that is being coated with the magnetic atoms, which allows you to essentially get a signature of the magnetism locally. You flip the magnetization of this tip and look at whether the tunneling from it modulates and how it modulates with the magnetic field, and you use that to know what you got underneath your sample. So here's an experiment. This is the chain, and you can basically flip the magnetization of the tip. I'm going to show you the details of this in a second, but here, just roughly, you can sort of see right away that the tunneling is modulated very strongly as I flip the magnetization of the tip up and down. Although there are modulations of the magnetic signal along the chain, if you study these carefully, you've discovered that the peaks here go to peaks here. Essentially, there is modulation, but there are no shift of the magnetic structure when you flip the magnetization of the tip. Now, here's some more detail. This is an extremely painful experiment. It takes about 3 weeks to do. You basically go to every magnetic field and measure this tunneling as a function of this is a perpendicular magnetic field to the sample. The red curves is sort of a classic example of tunneling between two ferromagnets. And this painful experiment basically shows you that the tip is actually switching at around a quarter of a Tesla. And this switching of the tip basically gives you this asymmetric signal. Now, through the course of this experiment, we found something that turned out to be very useful. If you go and put the tip away from the iron chain on top of lead, you measure some magnetic field-dependent tunneling, which, of course, is symmetric when you apply the magnetization such that to polarize the tip up or down. But as you're pulling this thing tip up or down, you notice that the magnetization signal, the tunneling, depends on the magnetization orientation of the tip. Okay? This turns out to be basically the signature of spin orbit coupling in our surface. Essentially, the spins in the surface of the sample would like to be in plane because probably there's a strong Rochebaud term here. And as a result, when you have your spin of your tip pulled out of the surface, you have less tunneling than when you let the tip have the same angle or be parallel to the surface. Actually, it turns out we didn't discover this effect. Somebody else had actually done this experiment, tunneling through gallium arsenide, which has spin orbit coupling. And their experimental results actually look sort of very, very similar to the experiments that we see doing tunneling on these on lead. All right, so it seems like we have all the ingredients. We have a 1D system, which we couple to a superconductor. We have ferromagnetism. We have strong spin orbit coupling. So the question is, does it go superconducting? And does it have a Majorana zero mode? So here's the chain, which is has the two ends of it. And with the STM, what you can do is you can basically put your tip at any location and measure the tunneling density of states. And here, when you're off the chain, you can see that there is a very beautiful lead gap. And as you move the tip onto the chain, there is a lot of things happening, okay, which I'm going to show you the details of. But essentially, when you come onto the chain, you get states that are inside the gap of lead. And there is an incomplete gap forming on top of the iron at this temperature, which is 1.4 Kelvin. And this asymmetry that you see between tunneling electrons and holes onto this chain structure, this is not unusual. We have seen this kind of thing when we tunnel near individual magnetic impurities as well. If you want, I can tell you details later. But let's focus on a spatial structure near zero at other energies. So this is the power of the STM. You can just tune the energy and ask, what do the states look like in real space? And in real space, if you tune your energy to zero, you see that there is a pileup of the density of state right at the end of the chain within about 1 or 2 nanometers from the end. All right, so that's good. That's the signature we are looking for. Let's look at that in a little bit more detail. So the green is what you get on the substrate. The blue is what you get when you're away from the end of the chain. And the red is what you get when you're at this end or the other end of the chain. And you can see that there is a clear zero bias peak in the signal. Now let me show you that data in a little bit more detail. So here is basically the color represents the height of the conductance. This is distance and this is voltage. And you can see at the both end, this is the zero bias signal that I'm talking about. And you can see that the zero bias signal is basically disconnected from all the other pieces in the spectra in the signal. This is actually kind of a key point. Namely, there is not a state that's inside the wire that sort of smoothly moves over to zero. Okay? There are states inside the wire that change as you come to the end of the wire, which you should do that. There is the end of the wire is different than the middle. But you can see that this zero bias peak comes almost out of nowhere, okay, in the signal within our resolution of these experiments. Okay? So, zero bias peaks. Well, you always worry whether what you're looking at is the Kondo effect. Essentially, that's sort of the disadvantage with some experiments where you have to apply a magnetic field to create your topological phase. Because if you apply a magnetic field and you weaken superconductivity, you can have the ugly head of the Kondo effect giving you the zero bias peak. In this experiment, magnetic field is actually very, very big perturbation. If you just put 100 millitesla, you basically kill superconductivity in lead. And once you kill superconductivity in lead, essentially all the features that I showed you, this is the gap, this is actually a real signal. I know it looks almost like I just made it from a, it took a long time to actually measure the exact same wire in zero field. What you can see that the superconductivity goes away and everything associated with it, it's gone. So this zero bias peak is indeed caused by superconductivity. You need superconductivity to create it. All right, so let me give you a little bit more detail about the structure of these chains, which we have learned with finer resolutions. One is the fact that iron, of course, doesn't fit inside on the lattice of lead. Okay? It sort of makes an incommensurate chain structure, which can be seen because it leaves behind these strains on top of the lead substrate. If you zoom in, you can sort of see that there is a modulation on top of this atomic chain of iron. And we've done worked hard to try to understand these features, and basically what we have concluded is that we do not have a single atom sort of thick chain. We actually have a triple chain. And the reason this is because iron basically seems to like to sit at the distances that it has inside the bulk crystal, okay, and it displaces the lead around to accommodate that. And that's what's happening here. So detailed calculation from DFT seems to capture both the height of these chains in the STM topographies and also detailed features of their incommensurate nature, if you like, which gives you roughly modulations that we see in the experiment. Now, of course, you can say, okay, here's the band structure of now more complicated chain, but is this now really topological or not? Okay. So you can, with this understanding of the structure, you can ask what's the band structure of the system. You can actually do a tight binding model, calculate the density of states. I'll show you the band structure in a second. But in fact, the features that we see in very rough models of these, just simple models of these chains, triple chains, are reproduced experimentally. You see features in the density of states far, far away from the chemical potential, indicating that we probably got the right structure here. Okay. Now, if you've got the right structure, if you go back and look at the bands that this triple chain would produce, they're complicated because you've made three chains and they all basically bonded, anti-bonded. But again, you end up with this situation where unless you made the mistake of fixing the chemical potential within about 0.7 eV, this system will have to be topological. Okay? It's just from the band structure of this triple chain. So there is this is another piece of evidence that we find. So now, it looks like our experiments are being followed up by other groups, so I'm going to show you what other people are doing and also discuss some of the other ideas or criticisms that have been made of the Majorana kind of interpretation of these experiments in more detail. So now, we put enough details in the paper that now it looks like people are having an easy time reproducing our experiment. This is experiments done at Basel. Essentially, they take iron, lead, again, the same thing, and they can basically create the same structure. This experiment basically also sees a zero bias peak, although there is some complication with this experiment, which is not understood by me, which is that they might be using a superconducting tip, and what's going on here is not completely clear. The reason using a superconducting tip is important is that if you use a superconducting tip, the Majorana signature shouldn't happen at zero bias. It should actually happen at a bias of the gap of your tip, which is at delta of your tip, not at zero. And this is now a second experiment basically reproducing our work, and now with a superconducting tip. We actually also did some superconducting tip data. I might have it here. And this experiment sees a zero bias peak, close to zero bias peak near the chain ends. Now, they don't see some of for the reasons we don't completely understand, they don't see as sharp of a peak that we see if we use our superconducting tips. It might have something to do with the details of the experimental setup where you actually make the measurement. But here's an experiment done in our lab where you can use a superconducting tip and you see this clear peak towards the end of the chain, which happens at not a zero now, but at the position of delta of the tip. So these experiments are now beginning to be reproduced, and other people are seeing the same kind of signatures that we are seeing in the lab. Now, when we published this experiment, basically the first question that was raised was the question of the length scale of this Majorana signature. And as you notice in the data, the length scale is very, very short in this system. And if you estimate the size of the energy gap that you expect to see in such a system, you get an energy gap, a P-wave energy gap, which should be of the order of a few hundred microvolt at most, 100 microvolt or more. And the criticism was that, well, this cannot possibly be Majorana, because the size of a gap would give you the localization length of the Majorana. But what people seem to forget is that what we have here is not a strictly one-dimensional system. Okay? We have actually taken our one-dimensional system and we've buried it inside a superconductor. Okay? And this, I think, is actually maybe an added advantage in our system. Because remember, even if you think back to the Shiba states, It's true that you have this exponential tail of states inside the superconductor, which is determined by the coherence length, but there is this prefactor, which is 1 over r squared in the wave function squared, which basically tells you the state is mostly living at the end, living on the length scale of K Fermi, and that's why it's living so close to the end. So our realistic calculations of these structures that I showed you about, you can actually quiz these calculations. They also show very, very short length scale. But now, work of Felix, who's here, and Leonid, and their students, have actually really clarified what we have going on in the system. Because what we are doing here is we are actually creating, we start with a D-band of the iron orbitals, and we take this D-band and we stick it into the superconductor, and you create these Chiba states inside the gap of the superconductor. And what the nature of these bands of Chiba states are is something that actually explains why we have such a short length scale. So to illustrate that for you, here's a calculation that Gian did. Essentially, you imagine you start with a situation where you have a superconductor, and you have just a band, the F band, basically transversing to the Fermi energy. And remember, we are plotting things here on a very fine scale compared to the band structure. This is one millivolt, for example, for the superconducting gap. And the band of a F orbital basically have a bandwidth of a half a volt or whatnot, something of that order. And what you find here is that when you create this in-gap state, you basically have to squash this in-gap state. How am I doing on time? 3 minutes. Okay, I better go. Okay. So anyway, so the main thing here is that there is a renormalization of this band structure that happens that explains this short length scale behavior. All right. So I mentioned this point. One of the other criticisms is raised is that if you have a special geometrical situation, you can create a very sort of special geometry. In which you have a certain ratio of asymmetries at the anisotropy at the end of such chains. And theoretically, people worry that maybe the zero bias peak we are seeing is coming from the sort of a shifting, if you like, of the Chiba states towards zero as you go to the end of the chain. And this is a calculation done by Jay Sao at Maryland. And this essential feature of this calculation, which is key, is that you get the shifting of states towards zero bias as you come to the end of the chain, which is not what we see experimentally. Okay. Now, of course, in this business, the question is, how good is your zero? Because if it's a peak that's split and you cannot resolve it, that's not really the Majorana. Or, you know, resolving it when you make a small chain, that's another story. But putting limits on, in these chains, how true the zero is what we've been working on. So we've been reproducing these experiments in the dilution fridge system, which gets down to, you know, improves by our resolution by 5 orders of magnitude. And it gets so good that you start to see that actually lead actually has 2 gaps on its Fermi surface. In the spectra of lead. And these experiments basically now see the zero bias peak, and I'm going to show you the spatial structure in a second. But you look at the spectra towards the end of these structures, you see that the zero bias peak is now there, and again, and is splitting, the bound we can put on it is less than 45 micro EV. We are pretty close to what can experimentally be achieved in a realistic setting in a laboratory. Now, these experiments showed us that the structure that we see, the spatial structure of the Majorana, is actually more complicated than those initial experiments produce. Now, this is an image just like that image I showed you of zero bias before, but now you see that it's not a single peak. Actually, it looks like there are 2 regions around the end of the chain where the Majorana zero bias peak sort of shows its eyes, I guess, in this case. And so we've been thinking about where this is coming from. And right now, we don't have a complete understanding of this, but we believe that from the calculations that we have done, is that most of the weight of the zero bias peak is actually inside the superconductor. So when you do an STM experiment, you come in with your tip, and actually your tip has to move further away from the surface because you keep the tunneling current constant. And as a result, actually, perhaps what we see, the best optimal place to measure the myo-iron signature is not on top of the iron because you're away from the lead, but actually right on the side. And this is what we see experimentally. Now, this gave us another idea. Do I have like one more minute? Okay, good. This gave us another idea to try a different experiment. It's like, okay, if the decay of the myo iron is very different than states on top of the iron, why don't we put lead on top of it? So this is burying the wire from the top by growing lead on top of it. This is actually a very difficult experiment. You first grow the lead, you first clean the lead, you grow the iron, you check the wires, then you go back and you grow on top of it, then you have to anneal it, you have to grow it not too hot, not too cold. And even then, it's not perfect. We get this sort of structure, which is that we got one monolayer of lead on top of this iron chain. And here we see something very interesting. What we see is that we clearly are measuring something different than before. Those asymmetric peaks that I showed you about are not there. And those are really the properties of these states when they're very close to the iron chain. But this zero bias peak doesn't seem to want to go away. Okay, and maybe with a few more monolayers we can kill it. But it looks like we can bury the myo iron, but we can't quite kill it. So which is good. So now this business, let me just add, that sort of has led to other ideas, and people are exploring theoretically all kinds of structures of magnetic systems on superconductors. And there are some nice things to extend this work, of course, going to different atomic system, different iron different kinds of chains, manipulating atom by one atom at a time. And then there is, of course, the 2D version of this story, which is that if you have a 2D band structure of ferromagnetic system with strong spin orbit coupling in lead, you could make a P plus IP superconductor with one-dimensional Majorana modes running around the edge. So that's it. That's most of my talk. And I'm happy to take questions, but let me just emphasize that this system surprised us in its ability to the fact that it's so easy to create these topological phases when you put these two iron, ferromagnet and strong spin orbit systems together. And the number of phases seems to be very, very rich, especially in 2D. Number of calculations show that. So there's much more to do. Thank you.
Questions?
Ali, naively speaking, you have a space inversion symmetry breaking at the surface so that there should be effective DM interaction. And don't you expect some kind of a cycloidal spin state rather than simple ferromagnet state in your iron wire?
So the structure of these wires, the way we believe from the STM data, is such that iron is essentially sitting at the nearest neighbor distance, which is very close to that of bulk. Okay, and the DFT calculation shows that the ferromagnetism is the lowest energy state here. You can add in DM and other things. I think if you had a 1D system, that will do that. But in the context of what we are interested in, that only helps, if you like.
I see. So what temperature you make this wire? You do some kind of annealing, right?
Yeah, so we grow them at room temperature, and we anneal them just a little bit hotter than room temperature, because lead is very soft.
Like 100 degrees C or something?
Yeah, 200 degrees.
So there is a little bit interdiffusion so that iron goes in. And
yeah, well, it doesn't like, they don't like to mix. And that's pretty much why the reason they make these chains. So, but you do need the annealing to get the diffusion.
So do you know how long the chain has to be in order for these features to appear? That is, if you, in your different experiments, you probably have too short a chain when...
So we've done some experiments, if we can find it, on shorter chains. Let's see, I'll double click on it. Yeah. So you can see here, this is kind of a longer chains. And then if you go to very short chains, what we see is a suppression of the zero bias peak. So if you put in the numbers, you know, this is not crazy. So in the sense that what we have is a long enough chain that within our energy resolution, we cannot resolve the splitting. But if you make the chain very small, this is consistent with the fact that the splitting is playing a role here and is suppressing a zero bias peak. Does that answer your question? Felix.
I was wondering, for a superconducting tip, one of the things that you would expect is that these Majorana peaks are actually symmetric. Now you have two peaks, right? One is plus the gap of the tip and one is minus the gap of the tip. And are your data actually symmetric?
I prepared this just for you, Felix. I didn't have time, but I figured you asked the question. So Felix has this very nice paper in which he basically predicts that if you, you're doing Andreev process into the Majorana, right? And as I said, when you use a superconducting tip, the peak should appear at the superconducting strength of the gap of the tip. So which is what this first peak is, okay? And this is basically the raw data, and this is the cuts of the data. And the red and the black here are essentially the electron on the hole part of the signature. So we have chains in which they don't look always symmetric. And here's an example of one that does look symmetric, okay, most of the way. And there are places where it doesn't look symmetric in a similar sense as the paper that Franke has and you have. But that's when you see sort of a background on the side come on top. But we do see symmetric peaks with a superconducting tip, and here's an example of it. I could let you look at that in more detail. Yes. But there are situations where we also see asymmetry. Now the question is, how big is that asymmetry? The superconducting tip seems to have a complication in the sense that it with lead superconducting tip, I think is there is issues of lifetime and so on, which make these peaks actually kind of broad. If you use a normal tip, somehow we seem to get better data, but maybe we can discuss that in detail.
Yeah. Could you put that two
chains parallel to each other?
Well, so in principle, if we can prepare a surface of a certain superconductors that are very hard compared to lead, we should be able to build many different kinds of structure.
Yeah, in that case, we expect a pi junction for the Majorana fermions.
Two ferromagnetic or one, two ferromagnetic the same way or?
Yeah, I think there is a sign of minus one.
While Zahid set up, if they have any other questions.
Okay, let's thank Ali again.
Thank you.